Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
January 17th, 2019. Thank you for joining me on this early edition of the Daily Wrap-Up. For those that are used to this being later, I hope you will catch this on the replay later today, as I'm sure we'll have a smaller audience early in this morning, but I have some things I had to deal with later today, but I wanted to jump on and get a show done today for a couple of reasons. There's some important stuff to get into today, but overall, I want everyone to consider with just a few topics I'm going to talk about today. I think actually four topics that I'm going to get into. I want you to think about the thing, something we talk about a lot on the show, the two-party system and the illusion of choice. I want you to consider how these two sides, which behind the scenes are connected in countless ways, use this system, this construct, to create your sphere of conversation in hopes that you will ignore everything else and focus on the points that they give you with the talking points they provide. Consider that this may all be done in order to give you the illusion of a debate, when in reality you're being kept clear of what they together, both left and right, are actually working to hide from all of us. So think about that as we go through the show today. I was on Fault Lines this morning, which I have some links in the show notes if you'd like to check out, on the Washington, D.C.-based morning show, the radio show, with Garland Nixon and Lee Stranahan. I always enjoy being on their show. As we don't always agree on everything, they're open to hear my opinions, and anywhere willing to do that is okay by me. And we had some great conversations about Syria, about the yellow vests and the problem with the violence going on there. So I recommend you check those links out for yourself because we had a really good discussion. They actually kept me on for 40 minutes this morning, which the segments are about 20 minutes. So I really enjoyed being on there and talking about this. Kevork Almasian from Syrian Analysis was also on this morning. So you can check that out as well. But let's get into the first topic of the day, something that I found to be very, very interesting. As usual, because of their almost accidental admission that they don't really know what they're talking about. And of course, I'm talking about the U.S. government in this regard. Coming from anti-media, U.S. rejects Russian offer, will pull out of nuclear forces treaty. Now, this is very interesting. We've been talking about the INF, the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, for a while now, and all of the information behind it, the reality of how the U.S. is really actually trying to struggle to combat what they see in rising from China, as China's not involved in this treaty, so they're trying to find ways to pull their way out of this treaty in order to continue to, you know, what would otherwise be a violation of that treaty in regard to China, and so on. And basically by making Russia the scapegoat as usual, despite the fact that Russia has continued to point out that the U.S. has violated this treaty for a very long time. But believe who you will, there's much other than all of that. There's something that's very important to point out in this story. So initially ratified in 1987, the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, the INF, is now about to collapse, as we've been talking about. It's leading up to this, with U.S. officials now saying that they will withdraw from the treaty next month. Now, the U.S. has been accusing Russia of violating the INF for years, related to a single missile design called the 9M729. And of course, its maximum range. As the INF, the treaty, forbids all nuclear missiles with ranges between 500 kilometers and 5,500 kilometers. Now, first, again, which Russia claims the United States has been violating for a very long time. Now, the core of this issue is that the 9M729 is being designed as a replacement for the 9K720 Icelander. Now, Russia maintains that the new missile has only been tested to 400 kilometer range itself, and therefore is compliant. U.S. officials, however, have accused the new missile of being comparable to the 3M54 caliber, a submarine launch missile with a range of 660 kilometers, which a submarine launch missile of that range is actually allowed under the INF, but a ground-based version would be banned. Now, the U.S. saw the similarity and just concluded the new missile must have a similar banned range. Now, Russia actually made a last-minute bid to save the INF, continuing to show that they're trying in every way to just abide by the treaties that they make instead of just pulling out of them because one side is not doing the accusations made by either side, really, at the end of the day. So in a last-minute bid, Russia is trying to save the INF, and this happened just yesterday, offering the U.S. a, as their quote, static display look at the new missile to confirm what it was, basically showing them information saying, see, this is what it really is. Now, the U.S. officials are demanding basically complete access to it. And unsurprisingly, Russia isn't willing to just hand over a brand new missile system to the United States to take apart and study. Understandably, as the U.S. would likely not do the same. Now, which, again, here's where it gets interesting. After the, Russia's not willing to hand this over, despite what they did hand over, and U.S. officials are now claiming it is the only way for it, to see the full information. It's the only way for them to really know its potential maximum range. Now, take a moment and really think about what they just said. See, understanding that they're dancing all around trying to make this narrative make sense when you realize that they literally just said that they don't know for sure. That the only way we can know for sure that the range is over what we think it is for you to just basically give us all your information about your missiles. So, in other words, we don't know for sure that it's violating this range. Yet, nonetheless, they're still willing to pull out of this entire treaty based on the assumption that this missile that they think is similar to the one on the submarine is violating the treaty. It's ridiculous. And in their own words, are now saying that the only way to really know for sure what its maximum range is for them to give them all the information. Again, in other words, they don't know for sure. And you can't make this stuff up. It's right in your face. And yet they're still pulling out of the treaty. Again, the reality is it has much more to do with China. And they're using this as an excuse, at the same time making Russia seem the boogeyman as always, while using it to pull out because that's what they want to do anyway. In addition to the fact that by many accounts, they're already violating the treaty as well. Very, very interesting stuff here. Now, moving on in relation to Syria, which is something that I think is important and one of the most important stories of the day, coming from Caitlin Johnstone from Medium.com. Very interesting. And guess what? As we've all been claiming, as we've all seen coming, just like happened with the false flag attack from before, this new attack is now being used to, at least in an effort, to keep forces in Syria. Who's shocked? I'm so shocked. War horse scramble to say Syria attack means troops must remain. Big surprise. I don't think anybody watching this show is shocked this is happening, and we've been calling it. We knew whether this was actually just randomly happened or they carried this out themselves to maintain the justification to be there. We now see that they are indeed doing this. Now, remember, on a side note, as we have these ships full of new troops and helicopters and all kinds of other things on their way to supposedly pick up the 2,000 troops and leave, I wonder what's going to happen if they finally decide to say, well, because of this bombing, we're going to stay. Just like I predicted, it seems like all of these people on the way, supposedly to pick them up, are now going to just be like, oh, well, we're staying and we're all here now. So what was a feigned attempt to leave 2,000 troops or to take 2,000 troops away from Syria just became a massive increase on the ground in Syria. Funny how that stuff works out. Trust me, I'm not psychic. I just know how these people think. And it's important to realize that. Now, that may not come to pass, but it's very, very likely. And we can see many of them aggressively pushing for it. Now, as Caitlin's article humorously begins by saying, despite the fact that ISIS would claim responsibility for a housewife stepping on a Lego block, and despite the complete absence of evidence that it had anything to do with the deadly explosion, all the usual cheerleaders of endless war are pointing to the Manbij suicide bombing and shrieking, see, Trump said ISIS is defeated and it's not. Which, by the way, it's not, actually. But the point is they're using this as justification to continue to, at least to try to keep the Syria occupation going, the illegal Syria occupation. Now, she makes a good point here. As Kevork Almasian from Syrian Analysis also pointed out, the closest ISIS stronghold is 250 kilometers away from this area. And there's really no evidence to support the fact that ISIS was responsible. It seems more likely that, you know, the CIA, as James Corbett would call it, ICIASIS with the CIA in between there, clearly back controlled by Western powers, as we've proven many times over, likely just said, hey, go and claim this so we can use this as a justification to carry out our agenda. That's what it seems like. Now, CNN International's correspondent Clarissa Ward told Jake Tapper, from Northern Syria, quote, ISIS is still a very real threat here. And the real concern that we are hearing over and over again on the ground, Jake, is that when U.S. troops withdraw, a power vacuum is created, and that only gives them more strength. Now, this is in my mind, akin to the gateway theory for cannabis. They continue to force this ridiculous claim about the power vacuum. Now, something like that is certainly a realistic concept. But the lie, the fallacy herein is claiming that this is what happened in Iraq. Countless people on both sides have proven that this is actually a fallacy, that the presence of the U.S. troops in Iraq and elsewhere in other places are what cause this problem to begin with. Not them leaving. Them leaving, and actually, truthfully, they never truly left Iraq, which is the reality we see today. Them actually leaving is a positive step in every regard. Even if it does cause some destabilization, which was only the cause because of their presence to begin with, it is going to lead back to some actual sovereign country reality where they can take back their own country instead of being occupied by a foreign power under the guise of humanitarianism, despite the fact that the U.S. itself killed over 1 million people in Iraq. Think about that. And now here she is, broadcasting from an occupation area in Syria, saying that we need to stay because if we don't, the terrorists, which we've brought in, which are stronger because we're here, are going to get stronger. It's counterintuitive. Now, toxic Syria war pundit Charles Lister, who is notorious for actually praising Al-Qaeda and is a senior fellow at the Gulf state-funded neoconservative think tank Middle East Institute, told Associated Free Press that this attack invalidates Donald Trump's order last month to withdraw troops from Syria. He literally said, quote, Trump's order was reckless and driven far more by domestic political concerns than it was by facts on the ground. Now think about what he just said there, saying that Trump's, and I disagree with this partially anyway, but he said Trump's order was reckless and driven far more by domestic political concerns than what's going on in Syria. Yeah, far be it from Trump to actually be more concerned about what's going on in the United States than battling a war against Assad and Iran in Syria. And they're literally saying that like that's a bad thing. Like, oh my God, Trump cares more about what the domestic policy than our illegal war in Syria. Oh my God, he goes on to say, to suggest ISIS is defeated because it no longer controls territory is to fundamentally misunderstand how ISIS and similar organizations seek to operate. Unbelievable, these people. Now, Fox News leapt into the fray, as she put it, with a quote from an anonymous foreign diplomat saying, quote, this attack today is a direct result of the announcement made by President Trump that U.S. forces are pulling out. These troops had a bullseye on them when the president telegraphed that he was ordering a pullout. MSNBC's deranged intelligence analyst Malcolm Nance topped everyone as usual with a babbling nonsensical post about how U.S. troops were killed in Monbij because there were no U.S. troops in Monbij. Funny enough. And then, you know, as he claims, proving that Assad and Putin may have allowed the attack to happen, which proves Trump's is apparently a Russian asset. He literally tweeted, quote, the moment Russia and Assad took over patrolling Monbij on Trump's go-ahead, we get hit with suicide bombers for the first time. It's possible Russia and Assad let the attack happen. Trump's treachery on this matter now kills our special operators. Russian asset, hashtag. Of course, possible. I love how that means that this is the case. But it's this same absurd narrative over and over, be it about ISIS, be it about Assad, that these people will literally carry out an attack because they just can't contain their bloodlust, given the U.S. the excuse, you know, given the U.S. the excuse they need to stay in Syria. Now, when we're talking about Assad, it's patently stupid. But when we're talking about ISIS, yes, we have a group clearly funded by Western powers to begin with, armed, supported, protected, but clearly they're out for blood. But the reality is the ridiculous counterintuitive nature of what they're saying is that ISIS, because the U.S. said they were leaving, chooses to attack before they leave, so to give them the reason to stay. I mean, these people, it's just so disjointed. These people are they really, again, as I always say, they think you're just too stupid to recognize the ridiculous nature of what they're saying. There's something more going on here. And at the very least, they're using this to continue to maintain an illegal occupation on a country that they shouldn't be involved in. Now, as Caitlin finishes by saying, these are interesting points. If ISIS is indeed responsible for the bombing, as war pundits are unquestioningly asserting is the case, then they're either really, really stupid, or they really, really want U.S. troops to remain in Syria. Or perhaps the attack was engineered by someone else who has a vested interest in keeping a U.S. military presence in Syria, either using ISIS as a patsy or completely separate from ISIS. Wouldn't be the first time a suspicious attack took place in Syria while the Trump administration was working to withdraw troops. So really think about what she's saying there. Really recognize that, that this has happened before, that this is something that very clearly goes, that benefits the agenda of both sides of the fake two-party system, as we've got Fox and CNN and left and right everywhere screaming about how we need to stay in Syria, showing you again the fake divide. Now moving on to a related story coming from South Front, which is really just more confusing to the whole story, entitled SDF, you know, the Kurdish-backed rebels, SDF, backed by the United States, claims it detained Turkish-backed cell that was preparing terrorist attacks in Manbij. Interesting. Very, very odd. So apparently after yesterday's suicide bombing, which reportedly caused casualties among U.S. service members, I believe it was two troops and two people working with the U.S. military, as they claim, the Manbij Military Council of the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, claimed that it had detained a terrorist cell linked to Turkish intelligence and Turkish-backed militant groups operating in northern Syria. According to their statement, the cell was preparing multiple explosions and similar terrorist acts in the Manbij area. Now, by this statement, the SDF, or this part of it, is de facto attempted to blame Turkey for the terrorist attack that killed U.S. personnel. However, just today, the Al-Bab Military Council, another part of the SDF, released its own statement on the issue by condemning the terrorist attack and blaming ISIS for it. So these statements show starkly the difference in approaches between the Kurdish-controlled and the Arab factions within the SDF itself. Very, very disjointed, as all of this is. Now, while the Kurdish-dominated part of the group, which is about 60%, is attempting to undermine the U.S.-Turkish relations, which I would think is for obvious reasons, and to prevent the U.S. withdrawal from the country, as all of this is meant to be, in order to create a Kurdish state, again, in an illegal effort to occupy Syria, as all of them are, the Arab part seems ready to accept the reality and actually work with the powers involved in the conflict to reach a political solution. But the reality here is that this is within the SDF itself, completely different objectives, and this is all backed by the United States. The reality over all of this is these are all illegal occupiers. Every single one of these people we're talking about are illegally occupying Syria, and that's really all you need to know. They all need to leave. They're breaking international law by being there in the first place. And again, the U.S. is just throwing money and weapons at basically anyone willing to fight Assad and Iran, of course, and destabilize Syria, even if that means working with the very groups they claim to be fighting, the very groups they use as the justification for being there to begin with. Now, really think about that. The already thin and shaky legal ground that they think they have due to the authorization for use of military force, claiming that they have the right somehow to just illegally occupy a sovereign nation because they claim to be fighting terrorism there, actually already thin and shaky, falls apart when they suddenly shift to, you know, post-occupation into just fighting Assad or moving Iran, which is what they've done. That so they come in with the guise of fighting terrorism, and that's the only barely legal, under their own new rules, barely legal idea that gives them the justification to do so, and then while there, shifts the narrative to fighting Assad, which means the entire thing, which was already illegal to begin with, is even now illegal under their own documentation. But they don't care. They don't care because they're showing their hand now. It's about fighting Assad and fighting Iran. And all of this is designed to maintain this effort. Now, whether Trump actually wants to leave Syria or not, that's up for you to decide. But the reality is, my guess is we're not going, well, first of all, as I said before, we weren't going anywhere anyway. Whether or not those 2,000 troops left, there's mercenaries, military contractors, proxy forces, and U.S. even told Israel, don't worry, we're not leaving the war. But now it looks like, regardless, these 2,000 troops probably won't even leave, and it looks like we have reinforcements right behind them ready to continue to increase the occupation. Pretty alarming. And moving on to another story that I think is relevant in regard to the government shutdown, coming from Activist Post, and this is something that I think is, the last two stories of the day, actually, something that really needs to wake us up to what's going on here and the government shutdown and all this stuff. And again, thinking within the two-party idea, giving you talking points within a very small area of discussion as if that's the whole debate, designed to keep you looking anywhere else, you know, such as the wall versus the entire spending package. This is something we need to be recognizing. Now, volunteers kicked out of a national park for cleaning it during the shutdown without a permit. People actually trying to take the initiative, their families, and in the picture there, you can see a house right across from this park. People living in this area say, you know what, we're tired of this park being completely dirty and run down because these people, because the government and the bureaucracy, we're going to do it ourselves. And they're told not to. This should be infuriating to all of us. Now, as the government shutdown enters week 5, as the article points out, debris, trash, and even snow are piling up at these national parks across the country as the bureaucrats who get paid to maintain them stay home. Now, luckily, however, volunteers from all walks of life, as we pointed out before, have stepped up to fill their shoes, and they've been doing a really fantastic job, actually. That is when the government isn't kicking them out. Now, a group of libertarians in Tennessee have been volunteering at national parks to do the bureaucrats' jobs for them. And they're doing it successfully until this week, you know, for free, by the way, showing you this fallacy that when the government goes away, that things just fall apart because the people are still doing it. Now, as the volunteers begin cleaning up the Shiloh National Military Park over this last weekend, they were quickly approached by park rangers who demanded they cease their work immediately and leave the property. Now, the park ranger couldn't give them a good reason for making them leave. He explained that the park is open and that they could go wherever they wanted. However, if they tried to make the place look nicer in the process by picking up trash and debris, they were crossing a line. He says there are forms that have to be filled out. Now, think about the bureaucracy in all of this and what this actually means. Here's the video for yourself.
That'll be my chief.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then we're obviously not closed as I passed like 6 joggers coming through.
The roadway's open. The park is open. All the grounds and the facilities are closed.
So
no one can walk on the grass.
Yeah, you can walk on the grass. The grounds are open. The facilities are closed.
So what are we violating right now?
I understand what y'all are trying to do. I mean,
I'm just asking, what are we violating right now?
Y'all are acting as volunteers.
Right.
And you're not volunteers right now. So,
well, actually we are by the definition of the word.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but what I'm saying is there's forms that have to be filled out.
We get there, but the government
shut down. To cover us.
We're not going to sue if that's an issue.
Well,
since the government shut down, it wouldn't do us much good.
Okay?
I'm trying here. I'm just trying to understand.
I'm telling you that you can't do this.
Okay, why is that?
Tomorrow, the chief will be here tomorrow. You're welcome to talk to him, Chief Allen.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything then preventing us from, say, jogging very slowly, picking up your trash along the roadway?
You're still technically doing the same thing you're doing here. You understand my point?
I do. I understand your point.
Yeah. I appreciate y'all's help. I would love to
help. Okay, so these joggers, if they happen to pick up some of the trash they drop, would you just say the same thing to them?
That they dropped it? No, because if they dropped it.
Well, okay.
All right, like I am trying to work with you. I just don't understand. If the grounds are open, we're allowed to walk on the grass, then what is it hurting us up brush and...
You're doing labor, and you're not a volunteer at this time. I mean, I would love to sign you up as volunteers. As soon as the volunteer coordinator gets back on the park, he'll sign you up, and we'll take all the help you can give us.
I mean, I have no problem signing a waiver of subrogation right now,
I don't have anything like that, ma'am.
I do. I work in commercial insurance. I have a ton of those forms blank.
Okay, well, this is the federal government. I mean, I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just saying that I need you to stop, please.
So the federal government is stopping us from cleaning up the parks due to safety concerns and liability concerns because of the government shutdown.
That's what it appears
we're
like.
We're not volunteers, even though we're volunteering, to be clear. The bureaucratic BS that's happening right now. Thank you. We'll leave.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. So you'll get this too. We can't finish this.
As soon as the government opens back up, we'll get all of this.
All right. Sounds great.
Now, liability aside, really, liability in and of itself in this regard is actually a lie, in my opinion. Similar to the way that they say that, you know, you can't feed the homeless because, oh, they could get sick and sue. Even though they've shown time and time again that that's not actually the case. That these people, the companies themselves, are the ones that are forcing that into place. Same way here. If you go out to this park and you trip and do, while you're scooping things up, Sure, you could try to sue somebody, but the reality is it's not going to go anywhere. Now, of course, the point here is, you know, you can't have people showing you the irrelevance of these government institutions, right? We can't prove that. We can't show that people can do this for themselves without their taxes going towards such ridiculous things, when in reality, those taxes go to the military. They just don't want you to know that. It's unbelievable here. This story really needs to show us what's actually going on. Now, as the article points out, indeed, the irony of being stopped from volunteering in the state whose motto is literally the volunteer state is supreme and speaks to the nature of government. Now, according to the ranger, picking up piles of leaves and sticks is not okay unless you scribble a bunch of, you know, writing on pieces of paper before doing it. Now, as the author notes out, this shutdown is proving the power of free enterprise and volunteerism, and it's doing it well. Youth groups, private businesses, and political clubs have stepped up across the country to fill in where government has left off. From Yellowstone to Washington, D.C., dedicated private individuals have been picking up trash, clearing snow from roads, maintaining trails, cleaning toilets, and much more. And they're doing it all for free. Business owners and individuals from all walks of life have seen the void created by this shutdown, and they're proving that private citizens can do these jobs just as good or better than the state. More importantly, they don't need the promise of a taxpayer-funded paycheck, guaranteed promotions, and a golden retirement to do it. Now, on a completely related topic, coming from Ron Paul, an article actually that was up yesterday, I believe, about this very same topic, that is really, I mean, I know there are people that are inherently ready to reject something like this. Keep an open mind in regard to these topics. This entitled Silver Lining in the Government Shutdown. Very interesting stuff he gets into here. Now, as he points out in the little caption, apparently this is about an article written in the Daily Caller by an anonymous, again, ridiculously, showing the lack of journalism today. These people just publishing anonymous things, but nonetheless, there's important information in this. Daily Caller publishes an anonymous article exposing what it's really like among all these public servants working in the federal bureaucracy. Apparently about 85% of them do nothing at all related to their jobs. With thousands of, quote, workers furloughed, the government offices are actually working better than ever. And as they ask, is there a lesson in here somewhere? Now, the reality is a senior Trump administration official anonymously wrote an article for the Daily Caller. And it says, quote, as one of the senior officials working without a paycheck, a few words of advice for the president's next move. At shuttered government agencies, lock the doors, sell the furniture, and cut them down. And it goes on to say, this lapse in appropriations is more than a battle over a wall. It's an opportunity to strip wasteful government agencies for good. He goes on to say, basically, that on an average day in government, only about 15% of federal employees are actually doing their jobs. As he or she notices in the office, the rest of them, they basically can't be fired. And what they're doing, and basically planning their weekend schedule, a vacation, even doing a second job while working and being paid by the federal government. Maybe even planning their next permanent position or next promotion. This is how they're spending their time. But of course, they're being paid while doing so. This is wasteful government, which is basically all government, as far as I'm concerned. But the reality here is that, yes, people in some degrees are suffering, but as this show points out, and as the article points out, the only people that are really seemingly have a problem with this are the people that just are seeking to get back to the wasteful government status quo. Of course, some people will suffer hardship here. Of course. But it shows us what we really need, which is less reliance on the government. And the fact that people, private people, charitable people are out doing these things because they want to. And that's what they try to pretend and try to tell you is not going to happen. Who's going to build the roads? The same people. We need to start recognizing the concept of self-reliance, self-determination. As I've said before, a tenet of a truly free society is self-responsibility. And we need to think about this in regard to what's going on right now and whether or not it might just be good to keep it the way it is and go for more. Now, I know some people just can't have that. oh my God, you're crazy, you don't know what you're talking about. That's fine. But please, do some research and actually try to understand what I'm saying, because you might just discover for yourself that what we're saying is true. Now, as I said before, this whole thing, all of this, the debate on the wall, the shutdown, Syria, everything we're seeing in front of us, it's all about diverting the conversation into a left-right debate. All of it. In this country, anyway. And many places actually outside this country, but specifically inside the United States. Diverting the conversation specifically into a left-right discussion. On topics of their choosing, mind you. So you don't look further into the whole subject. It becomes an argument over the wall instead of a discussion about government waste, military spending, and foreign aid. It becomes an argument over supporting the Kurds and defeating ISIS instead of a discussion about whether the U.S. has the legal right to occupy another nation while it all gets sorted out. The left-right paradigm, the two-party deception, is all about spoon-feeding you talking points within a narrow, prearranged field of discussion. Don't be a puppet of their propaganda. Begin looking beyond the partisan sphere. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.